Hello and welcome to Bite Back Chats Books. This week we've got a really exciting interview lined up with author Elizabeth Spencer. Elizabeth began her journey to becoming a published author when her daughter came out as trans, on the same day that Elizabeth's husband was diagnosed with a terminal disease. The journey that followed is a tender and illuminating examination of what it means to be trans and the mother of a trans daughter. I'm not sure I can say anything better than Elizabeth does in the interview, so without further ado, welcome Elizabeth. Elizabeth Spencer, welcome to the Bite Back Virtual Podcast.
Thank you for inviting me.
Well, thank you very much for appearing. We're here to talk about your book, The Road to My Daughter, which is out in February. And have to confess, I read this book at commissioning stage. So before, you know, when we were decided to take it on, and I know that for myself and my colleagues, like, we loved it so much that we we badgered the editor to get it accepted.
Oh, thank you very much.
This is quite exciting to be able to talk about it as one of our books. So just to get started then, can you talk a bit about the premise of the book, what it's about, and then what made you want to write it?
Yes, of course. So the book is about my personal journey as the mother of a transgender daughter who only came out in young adulthood, at a point where I had no idea that she was trans. And I came to the point of writing the book after I'd traveled with her through the whole journey of transitioning. And initially I wanted to write something that might be informative, a sort of factual book really, for other parents who might struggle with the process, because I had found it personally quite hard to get information, and I did a huge amount of reading and exploring to try and learn about what was going on. So my initial idea was to write something that would help other parents in the same position as myself. But as I started to write, I quickly realized that this book was more about my journey than my daughter's, and that I had to explore myself and my psychological development as I went through the process. So in the end, it didn't end up being a sort of how-to guide to transitioning. It ended up being a memoir that does contain quite large areas of information. I still tried to make it informative, but more it's an examination of my own processes and developments and the pain and the psychological difficulty I suffered at times, and also the joys. I tried to write my way through the whole process and come to a better understanding of both myself and my daughter. So it ended up being quite an emotional book, but with a strong undercurrent of research, which I was very careful to sort of end notes. So it's very much based in fact, and I hope will be helpful, but it's also very much my story.
Yeah, the book definitely does, it contains multitudes. It does read like a very profound memoir, but there is also, like, for myself, I find it very instructive and helpful, because I think especially for families of trans people, there isn't always that much information, or people don't really know where to look for it. So the more that's out there, the better. Yeah,
that is what I was aiming for. So it's both, I like to think of it both as a sort of reflection and a guide, I hope.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. So starting at the beginning then, your daughter Millie, her path to coming out as trans was quite a rocky one. And can you talk a bit to me about her childhood? Like, you say in the book that you didn't really suspect that she wanted transition before she came out. Like, was it, I'm guessing it was a bit of a shock for you then?
It was a shock, but at the same time, it was nice to have answers, because if I were to reflect on Millie's childhood, the thing I was most aware of was really how unhappy she was from the earliest age. And I tried very hard to understand why, and to talk to her and explore things with her. And in all our conversations and in all my thinking, being trans was not one of the options that I came up with. I would say that, 20 years ago, when Millie was a very young child, being trans was something that was totally not on my radar. I think it wasn't in the matter of public debate in the way that it is now. I'm not saying it wasn't there, but it certainly wasn't known or discussed. And so it wasn't on my radar. It didn't occur to me for a moment that that might have been why she was so unhappy. And that unhappiness manifested in many different ways in her life. I mean, quite severe depression, but also struggles with anorexia, struggles with bullying. It was a really very unhappy time. And I did think I was doing my best to help her. I certainly tried to do my best to help her, but I don't think I succeeded very well in that. And so when she did finally come out as trans, and it happened in a moment of great personal turmoil within our family, and that was what triggered her final decision to come out. She felt that she had no choice but to do so. When that happened, actually, although it was, of course, a surprise or a shock, I also felt like there might be the potential for happiness at last, if this could really be the answer. I wanted to help her be happy, and I wanted to help her be herself. And I think I also saw it as a moment of hope.
Yeah, for sure. Do you know at what moment Millie realised being trans was an option in that case? Because you say that she, there wasn't a lot of information about it when she was growing up. So I assume she realised that, she knew that something was wrong, but she didn't quite know how to put it into words.
Yes, I think that's very true. And we've discussed this. I mean, she tells me that she knew within herself from the earliest age that she was in the wrong body, but that she didn't know, even through her teenage years, that there was the possibility of transitioning. She was in a fairly, indeed very traditional kind of educational environment. She was at boarding school where she was a music scholar. And I think she was less exposed to popular culture than possibly she might have been if she'd been in a different kind of school. And I think she felt extremely isolated, and she didn't realize that there were these options available to her until she left school and went on to music college in London, where she met a great diversity of people, especially in her career, which is as a musician. She was meeting a lot more people of different sexual orientation, and she began to realize that she could be different. She began to research it. And so I would say she incubated that knowledge and intention for probably a good 4 years before she finally came out.
Oh, wow. So once she came out then, what were the stages to her transitioning? So from the start saying, I'm trans, then where do you go from that? Like, what is the journey?
It's extremely arduous and long and complicated. And it's actually something I really wanted to bring out in the book, because I feel that there's a tendency for people to think, or in the popular press, that one day you can say I'm trans and the next day you can, be taking hormones and planning your surgery, and that it's some kind of, because of the ease of transitioning, that there's almost like a contagion amongst young people to pursue this route. And so I really wanted to put that, the real journey out there, so that people could understand a bit more what trans people have to go through, the pain and the emotional and physical and personal pain that someone has to go through to transition. And it is extremely arduous. And it's very clear to me that nobody would do such a thing to themselves and the people around them unless they absolutely had to. And for this reason, I really hope to bring a bit more compassion to the sort of polarization of the current debate. So you asked me what the steps were. First of all, you come out. Then you have to start the process of living publicly in your affirmed gender. So that means initially perhaps adopting a different way of dressing, adopting a new name, adopting new pronouns. So that part is quite superficial, but obviously very, very important to the person who is transitioning. It's the first moment of public affirmation. But after that, the aspiration would be to move towards being prescribed hormones. That is not easy. There's also a very important element of counselling before that can happen. You can then seek to, in the UK, be put on the sort of the transitioning pathway in the health system. So being referred, finally getting a referral to the gender identity clinic in whatever is your centre, that is an extremely slow process and quite frustrating and also distressing, I think, for most trans people, certainly in this country, because it takes so long. The waiting times are years, not months. And for someone who is struggling with great distress in their gender dysphoria and body dysmorphia, it's a very painful time. Millie, in the end, went to a private endocrinologist. The hoops that you have to jump through in terms of counselling are still the same, but it helped. She felt that she just couldn't wait that length of time. And it was very important for her not to, actually, because taking the hormones at a slightly younger age means that you can physically transition more effectively. So she was very anxious to be taking the hormones before she was 24, which seems to be a cutoff time. After that, I only talk of male to female transition. I claim no expertise in anything else. Oh, I don't claim any expertise anyway. All I can talk about is my own experience of my own daughter. But I believe that as the body is exposed to testosterone over a longer and longer period of time, there is certain masculinization of the features that becomes more set. And so taking the hormones slightly earlier is quite important. And so in the end, Millie went to a private endocrinologist and was prescribed the hormones. That was a very, very great day of rejoicing. She was very emotionally overcome by it. She then spent several years on the hormones. Again, many struggles with the GIC, Gender Identity Clinic, in terms of getting appointments and so on. But she was always very, very clear in her mind that she wanted a full transition. So she wanted a gender affirmation surgery. But it's important to say that not all trans people do. There is a spectrum of how people might want to transition, and that's an entirely individual thing. Some people are happy with only certain elements. In Millie's case, she was very clear that she wanted a full transition. And in the end, she went to, again, just frustrated beyond measure with the waiting times. She went to Bangkok, where she had her surgery, and there are many, many other steps on the journey. Read the book. It's all in, it's all in there. There are a lot of interim things you can do as part of your transition. She had vocal therapy to change the quality of her, to feminize the quality of her voice. She had some minor aesthetic surgery to remove her Adam's apple. Both of those things came before the final surgery. And as I say, that there are, the way you do it is as varied as the individual. But that was her particular path.
Yeah, yeah, which is what your book spans, isn't it? The arc of that.
Really from her childhood unhappiness through her coming out, through every stage of the journey, and how it affected both of us emotionally and in terms of our own relationship with each other.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. I was wondering what the biggest difficulty Millie faced as someone that was transitioning in the UK healthcare system was, but it sounds like it was just bureaucracy, red tape, and endless delays from the sounds of things.
I would like to say that I think that there's more than that, because I know this is an issue that is extremely close to her heart and has caused her a great deal of distress and anger as well. And I think she would want me to speak out on this, as I do in the book. And that is that after the initial surgery in Bangkok, not everything went smoothly, and her recovery wasn't as plain sailing as it might have been. And for a year, she was in a great deal of pain. And she was bounced from one doctor to another, really endlessly, to try and find out the cause of her physical distress. And over and over again, people washed their hands of it. They told her what was wrong and then told her that there was nothing they could do about it. And it caused her a year of really extreme pain and distress. And again, in the end, she actually went back to Bangkok for some reconstructive surgery that solved the problem immediately. And I would say that lack of information on trans healthcare is actually a huge issue within the health system. And there are, in this country, no doctors that really specialize in holistic trans healthcare. And I think it's worth highlighting that. The other thing that I know upsets not just Millie, but many, many trans people, so much so that it has a sort of nickname, and that is something called trans broken arm syndrome.
Oh, wow.
And trans broken arm syndrome is where you present with a medical problem. It could be a broken arm, and instead of treating the broken arm, once that if they know you're trans, they suggest they refer you to a psychiatrist instead. That actually happened to Millie, not the broken arm, but she presented to an audiologist with a hearing problem, which as a musician was a very serious matter and needed to be properly investigated. And the audiologist told her that she needed to see a psychiatrist and didn't actually treat her. So there is a big problem in the health system for trans people. And some people might say, well, I've certainly heard it said, that other medical issues should take precedence. But those people, I suppose, are operating from the position that being trans is some kind of whim or psychological choice. And really, you shouldn't jump the queue in front of, I don't know, someone with any other kind of physical problem. And I was guilty of that understanding myself initially. And again, I do write about this, where I didn't really understand the medical science that does quite clearly point to transgender as being something in the brain chemistry, not a psychological problem. And that has been, just in the last year, clearly stated by the World Health Organization, where they've moved transgenderism from a psychological category into a medical category on the basis of the science. So as my daughter said to me at the time when I said, well, you know, I don't think you should just do this just because you feel like it, she became very angry and made me read, or suggested that I read, some of the science, which I ended up doing extensively. And of course, when you realize that it is a physiological issue, not a psychological issue, then of course there is no reason why that shouldn't have equal precedence in the healthcare system. There's no reason why trans people shouldn't expect the same high standards of medical care as anyone else.
Yeah, absolutely. And this kind of, well, prejudice, I suppose, I imagine it's something that transitioning people face a lot. And you talked about your own like misconceptions when you and Millie started her journey. Like, did you start noticing this prejudice a lot from people that you knew while she was transitioning, or were people generally supportive of her journey?
Well, I could only speak for myself here. I mean, I can tell you what I know of her, but in my own world, I would say I encountered fascination, actually. Maybe slight, yes, inquisitive and quite probing fascination. I didn't feel that anyone, I didn't experience overt prejudice, and I certainly don't feel I lost any friends or colleagues during the process. I found people to be quite supportive. I do know that Millie, on the other hand, was extremely anxious about prejudice, in particular how it might affect her career, where she was already well known in her former presentation. She didn't really have a lot of confidence that she could start presenting as a woman in the early stages of real life experience, as they call it. And she was extremely anxious that she would lose work and lose colleagues along the way in that process. I know that I don't think that happened in terms of friends and colleagues, actually, but I do know she's experienced very many unpleasantnesses in daily life. She's been abused and not physically attacked, but she's felt the danger of physical attack. So yes, I mean, there is a lot of prejudice, but fortunately in our personal lives, our friends have been very supportive.
Yeah, that's good to hear. I know that, like you said at the start, like from when Millie was younger, there wasn't a lot of knowledge about trans people, and now things are definitely improving. But do you think that attitudes are now changing about trans people? Do you think they're becoming like, it's becoming more normalized, or do you think it's just still a long way to go?
I think it is becoming more normalized. I hope that it is. I do think attitudes are changing. I think it's because there's more exposure. More exposure can also bring with it dangers and abuse. There is a lot of extreme prejudice out there, but I think most people are quite willing to live and let live. And I really, that's one thing I hope that my book might encourage, is just the realization that trans people, whatever you might think of what they're doing, that is their private business. And everybody should be worthy of dignity and respect and safety. I do think that the greater exposure in the media and the more that there is, and maybe something like my book might, I hope, help in that dialogue and bring that kind of normalization in due course.
Yeah, absolutely. Your book obviously contains a lot of information about Millie's journey, but also it does focus a lot on how your relationship with her kind of develops and changes as she also goes through all these changes on the road to her transitioning. So how did your relationship
change as she went through her journey?
I think that we became much closer, actually. I mean, I always thought we had a good relationship. She would say that was not the case because I didn't really see and understand what was going on in her life when she was a child. I think unfair, but you know, that's such is the role of the mother, really, to take their children's opinions on the chin. But I do think we became closer. In particular, we're not really discussing this here, but another very important thread in the book is that the trigger to my daughter's coming out was the fact that my husband, who was her stepfather, was diagnosed with a terminal illness very suddenly. And so in parallel with her transition, we were together negotiating the whole very distressing path of Baz's decline and then death. And so I felt that I was suffering a kind of double bereavement, and I began to realize, of course, that it was not so much a bereavement as a rebirth with my daughter, but it was an emotional whirlpool, and it was very, the two are very interlinked in my mind, and I think part of the closeness came from the fact that we were navigating this journey of end of life care together at the same time as Millie was trying to progress through her transition journey. And we supported each other a lot, because this another element of our care system is that adult social care is also extremely poor. So I found it very difficult to get help for what I was trying to deal with my husband, who was dying, and I really needed help, and because I still had to work, Millie still had to work. We were juggling a huge number of things, and I think that drew us together. I'm very grateful for the help that she gave me, and I think she gave me so much help because she knew that I was helping her. So, you know, we developed a strong bond. But I also made many, many mistakes, and I know that she has had anger towards me about certain things. I was often very clumsy in understanding really what she was going through. I tried to understand it. I tried to get it right. But again, you know, that this is the cross that you bear as a mother. You're always second-guessing your child. And it's not easy. And that's why I feel that my book can only speak for me. Everyone will have their own completely different path. But for me, it was very much a journey. It was a journey of learning about what being trans meant. It was a journey about learning about loss and about how the seeds of hope can flourish in the face of loss. And I think ultimately the book is one that has a very hopeful message. That's what I hope, anyway.
Yeah, I think so as well. So that seems like a really nice place to wrap up the conversation in that case. But I just wanted to ask one more question, which was what you hope people will take away from reading The Road to My Daughter.
I really hope that the book will encourage more compassion and more understanding. It's a book about love. It's a book about loving my daughter and wanting her to be happy in the world and wanting her to be her, and really all trans people to be accepted and acknowledged and respected and treated with dignity. So I really hope it's a book about compassion.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for appearing on the podcast.
It's a pleasure. Thank you very much, Nikki.
Thanks for listening to another Bite Back podcast. If hearing Elizabeth has sparked your curiosity, then why not take a look at her book, The Road to My Daughter? It's out now and available to buy from bitebackpublishing.com or wherever you get your books. And don't forget to like and subscribe. Until next time.